We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday, sunny with a high in the low 80s. The wind will be out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Friday night through Monday, mostly clear with lows in the mid-50s and highs in the low 80s. Monday night and Tuesday, partly cloudy with a low Monday in the mid-50s and the high Tuesday in the upper 70s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the 70s with lots of sunshine reported across the two states. At Rockford, Mattoon, and Carbondale, 77 degrees. At O'Hare and Bloomington, it was 76 degrees. South Bend checked in with 74 degrees. Lafayette reported 77 degrees. At Indianapolis, it was 75 and 76 at Terre Haute. At noon Central Time, Willard Airport reported a sunny sky, 78 degrees. The dew point, 44. The relative humidity, 29%. And the wind out of the south at 6. The barometric pressure, 30.28 and falling. And at 12:38, it's 80 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny. It's becoming more difficult to skip the ads on television. Some shows are now being built around products. NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports.
Those reality shows.
Oh, the Prius helps you stay in your lane.
These are first-class tickets on American.
And I'm sorry, we've got a technical glitch there, so let's bring you another story. The Agriculture Department plans to limit potato consumption among school children to 2 servings a week. But politicians and farmers in potato-growing states such as Maine say the spud is being unfairly targeted. As it turns out, school children have strong opinions about potatoes, too. Josie Huang of Maine Public Radio has more.
I'm in the cafeteria of Falmouth Elementary School in Falmouth, Maine, and kindergartner Theo Kowalski is happy to talk about how much he loves potatoes.
How do you like to eat them?
By my hands.
Okay, that's the literal answer. It turns out that Theo likes potatoes when they're already called French fries.
People make them salty, and I kind of like them when they make them salty, so.
Fourth grader Hope Cody, on the other hand, likes her white potatoes mashed.
What I like doing is, I like putting the steak in the mashed potatoes because that's what my mom does a lot.
Kids know how they like their potatoes, but no one seems to notice that their school has already cut their tater consumption to levels even lower than those proposed by the USDA. Kim Walker manages the cafeteria here.
We only have it on our menu maybe 2 or 3 times a month.
Walker ascribes to the USDA's assertion that there are healthier vegetables out there for kids to be eating. A Harvard study released last summer shows that potatoes, especially French fries and chips, top the list of foods that contribute to weight gain for Americans. Health advocates acknowledge that potatoes do offer potassium and fiber. Margot Wu-Tan of the Center for Science in the Public Interest says the problem is they block out other foods.
When kids are given the choice between fries and another vegetable, the kids usually choose fries. And so French fries crowd out other vegetables that kids need.
Maine is the nation's 6th largest potato producer. Senator Susan Collins says a legitimate concern about the overconsumption of French fries is leading people to vilify the simple potato, and that will cost schools as they turn to pricier veggies.
The department itself estimates that this could add $6.8
$1 billion to the cost of school lunches over the next 5 years.
Collins, who says she used to pick potatoes as a girl, has joined with senators from other potato-growing states to try to defund the USDA effort, which would also apply to other starchy vegetables like peas, corn, and lima beans. The House has already banned any funding from going forward to implement the USDA proposal.
The Department of Agriculture would be sending a signal to all Americans, not just to children, that somehow potatoes are inherently unhealthy. That's just not true.
Dr. Jonathan Schenken is a pediatric dentist who's been championing the USDA policy in Maine, which has New England's highest rate of overweight children.
We can provide kids with a model of future living and good behaviors at an early age, and this may be the only opportunity they have.
If there's one thing Schenken and Collins can agree on, it's this. If you're going to serve potato, it's best baked, minus, of course, the sour cream and cheese. Too bad fourth grader Gabby Esmond doesn't like baked potatoes.
Too hard.
Collins says she and her potato allies in the Senate will try to insert language banning funding of the potato policy when the USDA's appropriation bill is voted on in the coming months. For NPR News, I'm Josie Huang.
And now back to those television shows built around ads. It's becoming more difficult to skip the ads on television because some shows are now being built around products. NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports.
The name of this show alone got our attention.
This is My Yard Goes Disney.
My Yard Goes Disney. In this reality show, designers from Disney theme parks do things to people's yards that make them really popular with their kids.
Our team of welders went to work, creating a Tinkerbell-inspired birdcage and swing.
So how did we get to the point where an entire TV series would shamelessly promote one corporation? Brian Steinberg, a writer for Advertising Age, says partly because people just aren't watching commercials anymore.
People are tired of seeing commercials. They see an awful lot of them, and now they have the means to avoid them with DVRs, when you watch on the web or iTunes. They know how to get rid of them or to avoid them or zap them out of existence.
So advertisers are looking for other ways to get their names out there.
I'm Bridget Nguyen, and today I'm at Pillsbury in Minneapolis.
On the Cooking Channel, there's a show that takes viewers inside the test kitchens of major food companies.
And the Pillsbury Bake Off Contest is a tasty American tradition.
From the Kitchens Of was developed in partnership with companies like Pillsbury and Hillshire Farms, says Michael Smith, the Cooking Channel's general manager.
The companies have always recognized that one of the best ways to move the needle with consumers is to show your products in a context where they're really engaged.
And then I have the Jimmy Dean Hearty Sausage Crumbles.
Mm-hmm. Smith says the advertisers share in the production costs. On top of that, they agree to buy advertising spots across the Cooking Channel's schedule. He says in focus groups, From the Kitchens Of gets high marks.
Only about a third of the people perceive the show as being an advertiser sponsored or advertiser paid for show. 65% thought it was just a regular cooking show.
The basic rules are you can't deceive consumers, and consumers must know when they're being advertised to.
Robert Weissman is president of Public Citizen, a Washington advocacy group. He's been arguing for years that when a company pays to have their products embedded into regular programming, there needs to be some kind of visible disclosure when those products appear. He says it's really troubling when shows that seem to be disguised as advertisements target children.
My Little Pony, My Little Pony.
This is a whole TV series built around My Little Pony toys. The series is on the new cable channel, The Hub. The Hub is a joint venture between Hasbro, the makers of My Little Pony, and Discovery Communications. Many of the shows are built around Hasbro products, like G.I. Joe and Scrabble. Weissman thinks the whole business is nefarious.
Because kids are much more vulnerable to advertising and marketing tricks. Young children particularly don't know that they're even being advertised to at all.
The Hub CEO, Margaret Lesh, was unavailable to record an interview, but in an email insists that these shows are entertainment, not commercials, and points out that virtually every successful children's TV show has had toys or merchandise attached to it. Meantime, the Cooking Channel is gearing up for another season of From the Kitchens Of. Michael Smith says all of the advertisers, from Kellogg's to Kenmore, are coming back. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
It's fairly common in American courts for a woman to file a paternity suit as a way to get a man to pay his fair share of the costs of raising a child. But a recent court decision involved a man who said he wanted his fair share after the child in the case grew up to be a very famous basketball player.
There can't be too many reasons a man would go to court to prove that, at age 29, he had sex with the 15-year-old girl. In fact, maybe there's only one, if the product of that brief relationship was named LeBron. According to attorney Lester Bryce Stovell, he met in 1984 a young Ohio woman named Gloria James in a Washington, D.C. bar. After a few hours of courtship, the two went back to his Virginia home and had sex. A few months after that, she turned up again, and Stovell learned that she was both a teenager and pregnant. He also learned that she planned to name the boy LeBron. A tall man who likes sports, Stovell had one piece of advice for the pregnant teen about to raise his son. Make sure he plays basketball. As it turned out, the boy did play basketball and with some competence. So 20 years after the precipitating event, Stovell sought to reestablish a relationship with the son he'd never known and maybe rekindle some of that patrilineal spark that had been absent from both men's lives. But neither James, Gloria, nor LeBron seemed overly excited to hear from Stovell, so he insisted. A lawyer was contacted, a flight to Cleveland arranged, and a paternity test performed. Stovell was disappointed when told of the 0% chance that he was LeBron's father. But this just didn't sit well with the tall man. There were too many facts that seemed to point in one direction, including the fact that Stovell looks a great deal like LeBron. Frustrated with attempts to contact the superstar directly, Stovell arranged to visit his purported son, the one place he knew he would find him, at a Cleveland Cavaliers game. It was there, upon seeing LeBron in person, that he was convinced he was the man's father, and that Gloria James and others had conspired to falsify the results of the paternity test. In June 2010, Stovell filed suit against the Jameses for fraud and defamation. Part of the fraud claim was that, through Gloria James' deceitful actions, he had been deprived of commercial opportunities that he could have taken advantage of. Or, as the United States District Court for the District of Columbia noted, quote, apparently, Stovell believes that companies are willing to pay him for being the father of LeBron James, unquote. Unfortunately for Stovell, wholly speculative damages cannot be recovered in tort actions in either D.C. or Ohio, so that part of the case went against him. But then there was the defamation. Stovell felt that he had been treated poorly in public. Among other things, LeBron noted that he was going to be a better father than his had been. Also, one of his commercial endorsements had the tagline, quote, "It's all about being there," unquote. But the court ruled that not only are these reasonable subjective opinions for LeBron to hold of his absent father, but also that any negative comments made about said father could not be known to apply to Stovell until Stovell himself let everyone know he was the absentee father in question. Stovell lost the case on all counts. But like a great many legal issues these days involving celebrities, money, sex, and lawyers, this cringe-inducing little case seemed, more than anything else, to have at its base the question, why? Except for earning the reputation as a money-grubbing lech, wasn't Stovell also risking jail time for statutory rape? As it turns out, no. In Virginia, sex between a 29-year-old man and a consenting 15-year-old